coy lady runs behind a tree, singing sweetly as she shields her face from her mischievous lover. An angry father slaps an errant son and banishes him forever from the house. 101 dancers gyrate their sari-clad hips as the camera crashes into close-up. Now, you'll probably know, and possibly love, Bollywood, but that isn't nearly the whole story when it comes to Indian cinema, oh no. I'm Hardeep Singh Kohli, and for the next 2 weeks, starting here in Bombay, the city of a million dreams, I'll be exploring the past, the present, and the future of independent Indian cinema. And I certainly won't be making a song and dance about it.
We're from BBC in London making a documentary about Indian cinema. Do you have a couple of minutes to chat?
Sure, I don't mind.
Yeah, are you going to the movies tonight?
Yeah, I am.
What are you going to go and see?
We are watching two movies back to back. So I'll be watching Guru, and after that I'll be watching this Blood Diamond.
It's a perfect mix of Bollywood and Hollywood.
Yeah, that's right.
What about independent movies now? Do you go and watch them? Do you seek them out to watch them?
I really love movies like those also. I won't mind spending money on movies like that in a film hall.
Were you aware of the independent movement in the 80s, you know, kind of Shyam Benegal and Prakash Jha and all those films?
That's complete parallel cinema. That's complete. Yeah, I know that movement and I love those films too.
How about you? What sort of movies do you like to watch?
I feel there's no market for art kind movies. It's only now that they're building up. It's very difficult to get finance and get a screen in a multiplex. Multiplex is booming big time.
But isn't the beauty of the multiplex that there are five screens and the first four will be for the big release and maybe the small one with the holes in the seats and the mice will be left for the art house filmmaker?
But then even art house filmmakers are vying to go to global.
India is in the throes of a cultural revolution, a revolution driven by the booming economy. It's directly affecting one of the country's most high-profile exports, films. Now, I've loved Indian movies ever since I was a small boy. There was no better way to escape rainy Glasgow than through the silver screen, the beautiful colours, and the lovely, lovely ladies. Actor, writer and director Rahul Bose is a key figure in the independent or parallel cinema of the nation, starring in films that deal with real issues that show today's India.
You have five Bhangra rap singers and musicians who make their lives in India who are not Indian, I mean of Indian descent. They were not here 10 years ago, and I think that's fantastic. You have actors who are coming in from outside. I met an actor yesterday who's training with Roshan Taneja. I said, where are you from? And he said, you know, he's from New York, of Indian origin. He's coming here not to make it in Bollywood. He wants to do art house contemporary cinema. But he says, you know, this is where I wanted to come. For the first time in this city's history, Bombay, people, expatriates looking to make their life in Bombay, just like Indians used to want to go to Singapore or Hong Kong if they didn't make it to London or New York to make money. Bombay has now become that space. I met a Dutch filmmaker who's come here to learn film. He's come to India to learn how to make movies. He's young, and Bombay was his choice. It was either Bombay or it was Italy or it was going to film school in America. And he chose to come to Bombay to do this.
Everyone in the bus. What the hell are you doing here? Didn't you hear me ordering everyone to get into the bus?
Yes, but actually I'm just waiting for Mrs. Iyer. She's gone around the corner. What's the problem, officer?
Problem? There's a curfew on, goddammit.
What's the problem?
What curfew?
Look, a Muslim villager was killed this morning. Just a personal feud. But it's flared up into a communal riot.
Hey! Support our masse!
Mr. and Mrs. Iyer, a beautiful and brutal film written and directed by Arpana Sen, a Triple-Com Media production from 2002. The film explores the tension between Muslims and Hindus in contemporary India.
Some extremist Hindus are looking for Muslims and butchering them.
You mean the Muslims are butchering the Hindus?
No, this is primarily a Hindu locality. Some Hindu huts were burnt after the murder by the Muslims. Now Hindus are retaliating, it's not safe to loiter about. Just go to the bus. Go! Hey!
But will the curfew be lifted? I mean, will the bus start?
It can't. It can't even if the curfew is lifted, okay?
I got together with some young Mumbai filmmakers to have dinner and talk movies, two of my favourite things. There was a tremendous belief in a growing success for non-Bollywood films, and it's an indication of a more general sense of a bright future.
It's inevitable. It's as inevitable as this Indian economy going forward and really growing progressively. It's as inevitable as this Indian consumer class being built, which is going to demand quality goods and products in everything, including entertainment. And that's the inevitability of the Indian independent cinema. The thing is that for many years, all of us have questioned, why does Hong Kong have a crouching tiger? Why does the Hong Kong film industry have a crouching tiger? And lots of different nationalities have had huge successes in independent cinema. And I don't consider Monsoon Wedding an Indian film. So it was a foreign film. It's not an Indian film. It was funded by, I think, the UK Council and various other people.
Great film.
It was a great film. And I do think that there will be one huge one in the next 5 years. I do predict that. And it'll be a mixture of what I think is what we export best, which is yoga, sex, Kama Sutra, and spirituality.
Yeah.
Because that's what all the whites understand.
They call the film karma.
Why I keep saying it's inevitable is because there is such a huge growth in this country of awareness in people, of the power of the youth, which is driving so much of the spending on anything, you know, just consumerism, which is happening, is that they're going to demand a certain type of film which they can relate to.
Is what you're saying that the youth of India today will continue watching the big Bollywood commercial films, but because they've grown up in this mixed economy, this mixed aesthetic, that they are demanding the independent cinema movement to deliver something to them,
quality,
which is a vault face from the new wave. The new wave were demanding the people watch.
Yes.
Now the people are demanding to be entertained.
Absolutely.
That's writer and director Raja Menon, whose house we were talking in. Also joining us, Samir Gupta, producer and star of Brick Lane, Tanistha Chatterjee. Big budget escapist Bollywood has overshadowed independent cinema in recent years, but there is a tradition of more gritty and realistic films that this new generation has to learn from. That's a scene from the 1974 movie Ankur from Blaze Film Enterprises. It dealt with taboo issues like alcoholism, sex, and the caste system, issues very rarely dealt with in mainstream cinema. So here we are in city centre old Bombay on the way to meet one of the godfathers of the new wave of Indian cinema, Shyam Benegal, who was at the very heart of the movement, a man credited with its success. And he's still working to this day, so it should be very interesting to hear how the new wave started, because he was there and he saw it all.
You know, when independent India embarked on the idea of development and so on, industrialization, etc., a lot of people crowded into the cities of India, you know, like Indian cities bursting at the seams. And most of the people who have come from the countryside. Now, in the late 1940s, soon after India became independent, 1947 onwards, Indian cinema got a great kind of everything, got a kind of energy.
A feel-good
factor. Become freedom, free, you know, so there's new energies. And these people also wanted entertainment. And so films, they had to make money, had to cater to this audience because this was much larger.
So these new films, these entertainment films, were escapism to get the worker away from the drudgery of life?
Essentially, yes.
But that's exactly the opposite of what the New Wave did. The New Wave was about realism.
Yes.
What were your beliefs? What were the tenets of what you were trying to do as a filmmaker, you individually?
The idea was to be engaged in the world as you know it. The breakthrough came in India, strangely enough, I mean, post-independence I'm talking about, was the beginning of 1950s, when for the first time we had an international film festival in India. And during that time, a lot of the early post-war films, particularly those films that were made in Italy and Japan, were seen in India for the first time, and also films from Sweden, like Bergman.
Shyam Benegal won the Golden Bear at the Berlin Film Festival for Ankur and is a Cannes Palm d'Or winner, as well as the holder of 17 national film awards. There are few more important figures in the country's movie history, but there is one man, and one man alone, who everyone agrees is the godfather of Indian cinema, Satyajit Ray.
Good morning, Mem Sahab.
Bye, Riyasun.
Abhijan, or The Expedition, directed by Satyajit Ray and produced by Imre Films in 1962. Abhijan follows a disillusioned Rajput taxi driver who loses his license and is coerced into smuggling opium. Having failed in everything honest, he has to decide whether or not he will engage in criminal activity to make money. A writer, producer and director, Satyajit Ray was born and raised in Calcutta, from where he made films that came out of his roots in Bengal and its literature. His movies helped define India post-partition, and in 1992 he joined Chaplin, Kurosawa, Fellini and other great directors in receiving an honorary Oscar for his life's work. Ray's films were deeply influenced by European and Japanese movies. Ray was such a fan of European film that when Jean Renoir came to India to shoot The River, Ray would go and watch him work.
He was an art director with an advertising agency at the time, and he would go and watch Renoir shoot. And the cameraman was Claude Renoir, his nephew, and the style he had, which was using natural light and, you know, not doing this kind of manufactured lighting effects, all this kind of studio-based work that was normal to India is also normal to Hollywood. You know, so this was a completely different way of approaching the cinema. And Ray himself, after that, when he decided to make a film, he decided that he would get himself liberated from the conventions of the studio and the conventions of conventional cinema. And that's how the first break took place as far as India was concerned.
Shabana Azmi took the lead role in Benegal's Ankur. It made both his and her names and had implications for their careers for years to come. It also proved that it was possible to make an independent film that crossed over into the mainstream.
Ankur became a celebrated film because it was the definitive breakthrough film in Hindi cinema that really gave a fillip to the parallel cinema movement, and many such films started to be made because Ankur was made on a shoestring budget and went on to earn about 20 times its budget, and so was considered a successful film, although when you compare it to a mainstream film, it was really a very small amount of money that it made.
First feature film, massive commercial hit, and yet was a socially aware film. You must have been yourself surprised by its success.
Yes, I was. I was very surprised by its success because I had shown the film to Ray. He was my first audience. You know, because I was a great acolyte of this man. So I said I must get his opinion on my film. So he was in Bombay. I showed him the film. So he asked me, actually, what my hopes were for the film. And frankly, I told him, I said, you know, if it can run for the weekend, I'd be very happy, you know, in a single cinema in Bombay. And he said, don't worry about it, because I think it'll run for many weekends.
I think it ran for 25 weeks
yes,
in the end?
Yes, indeed, yes, it did. I had a proper UK distributor after that. For all my films over the next 10 years, it gave me a kind of confidence in the kind of subjects that I wanted to make films about. At least for the first 12 or 14 years of my filmmaking, I really didn't have to worry about any of that. I would just decide to make a film and go ahead and make it.
Ankur crossed over from the small budget art house to the big screen, the mainstream. And the issue of the perceived corrupting influences of crossing over is a hot topic for today's independent filmmakers.
It's a non-development culture. So there is no development in India. I mean, nobody asks you about your script. When you go out to a meeting in general and you say, I have a film I want to make, the first question is, who's your star? People are like, why are you making a film that's so small? Why don't you just go bigger and we'll fund you? And it's a strange thing that's hitting you, right? Because I'm sitting here saying, hey, all these years I was struggling to find someone to give me 2 rupees to make a film. And right now I'm in this place where I'm sitting down and saying, hey, you know what? I want this film. It's a 3 crore budget. And the guy's saying, you know, 3 is a bit small for us. Do you think you could, you know, kind of get somebody in and let's go to 6? And I'm like, no, I mean, this is my film, right? It's like...
But that's purely because of a mindset which exists not only with financiers, but down the line from the whole value chain. The distributors, the exhibitors, sure, the people who actually are the collection agents and, let's say, the pillars of the industry, the exhibitors. If the exhibitor does not pick up a film which is small and doesn't have stars, then the distributor has no business.
Yeah.
Hence, this whole thing passes on to the filmmaker where a small film is not greenlighted.
Ankur is a model of the kind of small-budget movie that is made so well in India.
mainstream films, Bollywood, as it's come to be known, are not in the business of taking on anything more difficult than resolving a love triangle. Although, frankly, that's probably difficult enough. Independent movies love a good, gritty social theme, preferably one that deals with a massive taboo. That is the perfect recipe for art house cinema.
Let me give you some information, madam. That hanky-panky between you and Sita, madam, is not good for the family name. Think about it.
Fire was produced by Trial by Fire Films in 1996 and was so controversial it led to cinemas being closed down and protests in the street. It's a sexual melodrama by Deepa Mehta which explores family values, love and loyalty in modern India.
Desire distracts from the path to God. Desire is the root cause of all evil. Swamiji says the only reason to have a sexual relationship is to have sons that will carry on the family name.
Shabana Azmi plays Radha, who falls in love with her daughter-in-law, Sita, played by Nandita Das.
It seems to me, and I could be wrong, that independent cinema in India, it's tackled the feudal system, the rich-poor, and issues of sex and sexuality. Has it tackled the religious divide in India at all?
Not really. I mean, there's a film called Parzania at the moment, I think, that is dealing with the Gujarat riots. But it is considered a very taboo, very sensitive subject and would find difficulty in finding financiers and distributors. And so that's a topic which I think filmmakers wouldn't want to talk about in a hurry, except if it was about people coming and embracing each other as brother to brother.
But do you think if India continues to resist the temptation to make meaningful films about what, in a sense, is the issue that has created India, it's a point of, you know, being of Punjabi stock, for me it's a sharp reminder that half the Punjab, more than half, resides in another country.
Yes. One of the things that we still suffer from is the fact that we haven't dealt with partition and its scars head on, and particularly in our literature, particularly in our movies.
Shabana Azmi. The scars of partition haven't just been left on India itself. They're also on us, non-resident Indians, too. These films have taught me a lot about the life my parents left behind, the country my parents left behind. And now NRIs are influencing India's contemporary indie cinema scene.
It's interesting, it seems to me, with recent comments by the Indian Prime Minister about the Indian diaspora around the world, statistics suggesting that by next year, the UK will account for 53% of overseas receipts for Bollywood cinema, that there is something very exciting about the diaspora re-engaging with the subcontinent.
Absolutely, because imagine that now we have 26 million people of Indian origin all over the world. It's a huge number, you know. I mean, it constitutes the population of at least two countries of Europe. So, you know, you have that many people of Indian origin all over the world. Now, these are people who, in some sense, have a cultural connection. And for them, cinema is a means of telling them their own stories. You will at least witness the stories of your parents.
Director and producer Prakash Jha thinks too many films are being made with an eye on the foreign markets.
They're making films for the people who go to the multiplexes. And even more than that, they're making films for people of Indian origin who live in the US and UK, unfortunately. Yeah, because that is why there is no more Mother India.
Shyam Benegal, for example, a few years said that the future of independent Indian cinema rests in the hands of NRIs more than contemporary Indians. Now, he's changed his feeling about that and that he's more hopeful about resident Indians. But films like Monsoon Wedding have done a great deal to further that movement, wouldn't you concede?
Yes, it has. Well, people, I suppose, in those countries are more aware that India exists. And it's a modern country. In that sense, yes. And that their concerns and our concerns are not so different. Maybe in that sense, yes. But I'm talking of films that Dil Chahta has spawned. And there's so many clones being made of the very affluent English-speaking urban India. So I think more and more films will be made addressing that audience. And the rest of India can watch television, you know.
Yeah.
I sometimes feel in India we are accepting too much of the Western influences.
Well, you know, I mean, that's a huge, huge question, because when you choose to be modern, sure, there will be westernization of India. You cannot expect it not to be, because when you look at progress, progress is defined in Western terms. You have to accept that there will be certain kinds of casualties. Any kind of modernity project automatically assumes the proportion of standardization. It's like the West, you know. If you go to a 5-star hotel, doesn't matter which part of the world, you are in the same place. You know, now that's what's happening to India as well. But it is our pluralism that will, in some ways, temper this process, according to me.
Shyam Benegal there. People forget that India as a country is only 60 years old. It has 22 languages, a plethora of dialects and a myriad of cultures. Can film help bind all these disparate forces? Rahul Bose.
You have at this point of time chaos, which is fine. I think that there doesn't have to be this one film movement. The temptation to join the dots together and say, this is what unifies these various brands of cinema is a chimera. It's an illusion. You cannot join these dots. You have to accept the fact that there are different people being born in this country from completely different backgrounds, and they don't have a connecting point except youth and energy.
There does seem to me to be a unifying factor in India, which is the opening of the marketplace in India, which I think seems to dominate every aspect of life. And I think that is what is possibly putting a rift between urban and rural, rich and poor, men and women.
Sure, absolutely.
I understand that it would be too easy to join the dots, but doesn't India, in a sense, need some sort of unification if it is to survive?
You know, Hardeep, I totally agree with you. If you were going to talk to me about mainstream Hindi cinema and saying this whole obsession with the markets, and I would then talk to you in a totally different way. I would say, yes, clearly that obsession, the market-driven obsession, is showing even in the stories that mainstream Indian cinema is putting out. But since we're talking about a contemporary, not necessarily art house, but certainly independent cinema, that's where I think that the independent voices, there is one thing that could connect these voices, and that is the audacity to be heard. The very artful way of wriggling through the chaos of India to do your own thing. Now people are saying, you know what, I don't need to actually do my father's business. I can become a filmmaker. But I can use the mentality of getting through the system. Instead of running a small business, today I'm doing it because I'm a filmmaker, I have things to say.
India is a country where division by money and class is almost overwhelming. Prakash Jha believes young, middle-class, Hindi-speaking filmmakers are out of touch with the reality of real people's lives.
Most of the young people are not even aware about the society they live in. They live in a very, very kind of like segregated, very cocooned, safe, because, you know, this metropolis of Bombay is not India, no, not at all. And I see that in cinemas, the new filmmakers, the young filmmakers, even when they are taking up real issues, their understanding of politics is limited. I mean, there is still some very interesting filmmakers in Bengal, the young people who are doing very good work, and I think regional cinema. Hindi cinema has this limitation. Please try and understand. Hindi cinema is always burdened with the oppression of trying to become commercially successful.
I mean, when we talk about crossover, it means that it crosses culture in terms of content. Hmm. It's not about having a mixed cast from all over the world or anything like that.
The beauty of it is that we are much more universal now in the way lots of things happen, right? Which we weren't earlier.
So I don't think, like, when I saw my Greek fat wedding. It crosses over cultures in terms of content when I talk about basic emotions. So it's not really that is exactly what even Bendit like Beckham does. It just crosses over cultures in terms of basic emotions. Right. And
all this will always be an urban Indian phenomenon. In the last couple of years, we've become a complete capitalist economy, with the rich getting supremely rich in this country, and the divide between the rich and between the have and the have-not is huge now. You must understand, Indira Gandhi ran this country like a social leader. She was socialist at heart, okay? Today, we are more capitalist as an economy, as a country, as a society, than India has ever been in 60 years of independence.
And you're run by a coalie. which is what I am.
Look out for East India Company, which is coming to colonize your markets very soon.
You've got to do that wine. So what's the name of your company, Sumit?
The East India Production Company, which is going to make films to colonize the West.
So can I just say, don't ever accuse the Indians of not having any irony. I'd like a drink now, please.
Yes. Are economic influences watering down Indian films? Can its independent filmmakers help preserve the uniquely Indian themes and styles? Or will the corporate powers that are taking a grip on the country turn its film into celluloid hamburgers?
We are a pluralistic society, and our strength lies in our pluralism. And this is one of the things what the new cinema, I think, constantly tended to re-establish. And this needs to be worked on again, because you see, on one side you have this great standardization. There's also cultural standardization. Say, for instance, if you look at the new urban, westernized kind of cinema, Indian films being shot in London, in Scotland, in New York, or Sydney, or wherever, and the Indian stories, but placed in contexts that are not Indian. Now, this is a kind of aspirational thing, which is the middle class aspiration of India. But there is also another India. The new cinema dealt with that part as well. You see, the whole thing is, you think global, but act local. And that kind of cinema, I think, is poised to make a return in some small way.
So you're hopeful for the future of independent Indian cinema?
Oh yes, I think so.
I think inevitably when I came to India at the start of this journey, I had rather romantic ideals of agitprop cinema, tub-thumping cinema to fight religious, racial, sexual inequality in India. But actually, India's about the marketplace, like Britain and America are about the marketplace. If you make a quirky, interesting, good film, whatever the budget, people will go and see it. India has a middle class larger than the population of Britain and America combined. Something like 300 million people here are affluent middle classes. They want to see intelligent, stylish, artistic cinema about India. They're proud Indians. And it's going to be very interesting to see how this new global India reflects on its new global presence. But I think things are less upbeat than I thought they were. I think there isn't a unified voice in a new India. But I don't think that means there can't be one.